Hey, welcome back to the Dan Bongino Show. We are live at the RNC. I've got a co-host and really an amazing guest. So let me just give you a heads up. First, MyPillow, having a $25 extravaganza sale on some of their amazing products. You can check out the deals at MyPillow.com. Make sure you use promo code Dan. Great company, paid for the show. Really appreciate it. Folks, so today we're here at the RNC, and I've obviously known about Russell Brand forever. We were just having a conversation. You're never supposed to talk about conversations off the air because have it on the air, whatever. But it's important. I said to him, Russell, you know, you should be really proud of yourself. I said, most people in their lives, not you out there in the audience, not men as an insult or anything like that, to be derogatory, but most people get one act. They do. Whatever that is. You may be, you know, the best writer, the best poet. You may be the best sanitation worker. Man, listen, everybody in this world adds value and makes the world a better place. Almost nobody gets two acts. Almost nobody gets three acts. And I said to Russell, I think you and I share a lot in common because you were a world-class comedian known all over the world. You were an actor in some of the most epic movies ever, Forgetting Sarah Marshall. I said, people must still to this day. Now you're one of the world's top podcasters on Rumble and elsewhere, and you're in your third act doing it. It's just amazing. So again, I've got Evita with me right here from early edition with Evita. We're both going to be hitting Russell with some questions. He's been kind enough to join us for about a half an hour. Russell, how does that make you feel though? Having been in all these spaces, I can see you're kind of thinking about that now that I should save your answer for the end. This is your third act, man. That never happens.
When being at somewhere like the RNC, even though it's entirely novel to me, there are things that are familiar too. For example, when you're inside the entertainment industry and you go to award ceremonies, there's a particular atmosphere and a sense of hierarchy and power and trends. There are certain sort of patterns, it seems, that move through life. I was interested, Dan, in when we were speaking earlier on air, how you have deployed your abilities in various areas also. Still, I suppose, at the root of it, you feel like there is some essential thing in you that's looking to express itself. Because of the way that things are politically right now, over the course of today, while I've been talking to people that are obviously strongly associated with the right, who are figures of the right, you know, from my country, Nigel Farage or Marjorie Taylor Greene. And Nigel's slightly different because I've known him for a long time and I've had sort of actual confrontations, verbal confrontations with him on air. But Marjorie Taylor Greene, I've only sort of seen her and how she's sort of condemned and treated in ordinary media. And she's one of those people where I looked at her and I thought, I can tell she's all right. I can tell she's a person that I recognize. I know that type of woman from England, like women that are like not going to take any shit. I like that. But I know that sort of because there are still legacy media outlets that sort of, I feel their encroachment and their tendrils. I've been attacked by them so many, many times. I've moved through that world. And it's difficult to sort of feel like you owe any kind of loyalty or fealty to organizations and institutions that have such it seems to me at least, what I've experienced, abominable values. When I first came out, I did this interview once.
You almost did, like, but in a real way, not like in some artificial way, you know?
It was firstly, I did an interview on the BBC in the UK, probably over 10 years ago now, with a guy called Jeremy Paxman, who was the sort of defining pundit stroke anchor in UK news. He was the guy that would take politicians to task and like ask them the difficult question and be bullish and abrasive with them. And I had an interview with him once where I said that I don't believe in either party. I wouldn't vote for any of them. And no one that I grew up with votes for people either because we don't believe in politics. Think whoever you vote for, you get the same sort of thing. They're all corrupted and owned by the same set of interests and systems. There was this moment where like sort of some people within liberal media had sort of been kind of excited about me for various reasons, whether it was to do with the entertainment industry. But I noticed how quickly they sort of turned on me when I spoke when I became sort of openly anti-establishment. And the people that were worst were not the right-wing media. In my country, that's organizations like the Telegraph, say, for example. But the ones that are meant to be like liberal. And liberalism, the way they present it is meant to be about equality and civil rights and kindness and love, values that you might find in spirituality or religion, and obviously now I would see it from a perspective of Christianity. They were the people that seemed to take the most delight in being cruel and being mean, but just so that it's not like just about myself, because I obviously talk about myself a lot. I had the realization with Marjorie, like before I met her, if Marjorie Taylor Greene, if it suited them, when she was like bringing down Anthony Fauci, they would go, look at this woman and how she handles the patriarchy. This is a feminist icon. But because they sort of don't like the stuff she says or right. the class she's from and the way that she talks, they're like, ugh. They would, if they could, they would just call her a bitch or a whore, but then no, they're not allowed to use those
words.
But
that's what they're thinking.
That's what they're thinking. And I actually think that that's sort of what they believe. And so as I've moved through these various worlds, in a way, I've been doing the same thing. In fact, I don't know that I ever would have even become a stand-up comedian if had I been introduced to the possibility that you could get involved in evangelism or preaching or talking to congregations. But the culture that I come from, people don't tell you openly God is real. There is a way that you could, there are tools, there is access, there is a system of belief that can help you navigate these spaces. So that's why I became, speak just for myself, but I think it's pretty common, become a drug addict and an alcoholic, is because Is this it? Am I supposed to stay alive and experience this? What is the meaning? What is the value? And then pursuing fame and becoming famous and sleeping around and doing drugs and having access to fame and money. Is this it? All of them.
Do you find
empty?
Like it's an endless search for dopamine, sex, drugs? Like if this is it, I might as well have a good time, right? I mean, just get the dopamine high.
Well, I don't actually think that it was just accepting dopamine and pleasure. I think it was the pursuit, the feverish pursuit of something beautiful and something real. And it's only now, you know, as a father of three kids, at this point in my life, I'm beginning to get a real sense of what it is, even though I've also been in recovery for 21 years. So I'm a slow learner, I think. I learn slow. I think fast, but I learn slow. And like when I got clean from drugs and alcohol, I started to sense, oh, it's about spirituality and stop being so self-centered and selfish and pursuing stuff. But it's only since Christianity that I'm starting to realize how fundamental the letting go of selfishness is and how difficult that can be without guidance.
I want to ask you about your conversion, because you've been talking about it all week that we are in a spiritual war. Dan, you talk about this on your show all the time too. You're seeing things like transhumanism. You're carrying your rosary beads with you right now. And how is that going to, I think, affect the right? Because we're seeing competing interests, right? We're seeing, you know, we're seeing really a revival in Christianity at the same time, but at the RNC, we're also seeing this idea that we're going to be a big tent. So how do you think we should grapple with that and who we are as a movement?
Well, I don't know about the right at all, but what I sense is that Christianity, my humble contribution to it as another Christian will be to communicate about what I've learned in a way that I hope might impact people differently. Mm-hmm. Because I've come not only from a background in addiction, but also someone that's been infatuated with fame, and also someone that's been very interested in New Ageism and a variety of different religious ideas, and rejected Christianity primarily because of its availability, ubiquity, and its simplicity. And like, oh, that's what my nan does. That's for grandmas. I'm not interested in this stuff. And I sort of somehow thought I'd already read the Bible. I'm always doing that. I do that of everything. If people asked what I thought of a film, even if I've not seen it, I'll sort of go, yeah, I'll give an opinion on the film, even if I've not seen it. It's a terrible trait. But like when I actually read the Bible, it was like every single day I'm getting struck with extraordinary power and mystery that pertains to me and talks openly and continually about the necessity of overcoming self, which has always been the challenge. Mm. Not so much the pursuit of dopamine, but the belief that my personal pleasure and power was the apex of experience, rather than happiness is a byproduct of purpose. Happiness is a byproduct of purpose. And I go in and out of it because I do purposeful things a bunch. You know, like you said, I've done a lot of things in different areas. It's not like I've been sat on my ass in a wheelbarrow smoking weed. I did do that, but I've done other things.
And while you were doing the other
Right. Sent some memos during that, auditioned for cat food commercials. So like, You know, so I suppose, yeah, how do I imagine that? The point I'd like to make of you two, if I may, is that perhaps, like, an authentic Christianity will pursue peace, and an authentic Christianity will pursue love. And in spite of the fact that outside of this extraordinary event, the legacy media will still be saying, J.D. Vance is a monster, Trump is a monster, you have to vote Biden, otherwise it's going to be fascism, Trump will make himself dictator, there will be no more elections. What is irrefutable is that the leaders of this political party are saying, we want to end war. We care about ordinary Americans. Now, that being able to represent ordinary Americans above corporate interests, I'll enjoy seeing how that plays out. And I remain skeptical about any political movement that operates within these institutions being able to enact those kind of policies. But starting with getting out of foreign wars seems like in itself, as we discussed before on my show, such an important thing that I can't believe that people can still be so celebratory of a hollowed out, facile, corrupt military industrial complex sponsored big pharma supporting Dem party while still claiming that the demonization of Trump is that their ongoing demonization of Trump is the only tune they have to play.
So I talked about this on the early edition, this clip on Fox of J.D. Vance saying, you know, we have to hit Iran hard and all this. And it just felt very, I think, impulsive and aggressive. And it was, so many people that I respect, like J.D. Vance, Dan, you have a lot of great things to say about him. Tucker Carlson has a lot of great things to say about him. I don't know, how do you guys feel about those comments about Iran and this need, I think, an energy to say, no, we're not for forever wars. We're not interested in that as a party anymore. And then you see this from our VP candidate. I'm really interested in what you guys think about that.
Dan, you should go first because I didn't actually see those comments. And even though I say that I will comment on things even if I've not seen them,
you gotta stop yourself.
I'll be able to do it better if I've seen what you think first. Because remember, you like to, with integrity and investigation, represent political perspectives responsibly.
I do. And I want to marry up what you said with her question. It is not a talking point to state that this military-industrial complex is real. It's an axiomatic fact. You can call it whatever you want. Like I said, the deep state, the silly state, the complex, it doesn't matter. There is profit to be made off war. I'm not an anti-profit guy, Russell. I'm a capitalist. I'm all about it. And if people make money producing weapons that'll keep everybody safe, that's great. But if your only motive is to keep a perpetual war state going precisely because of the profit motive involved, and people are being brought home in body bags because of it, I have a natural issue with it. I don't like easy categories. When people go, he's an isolationist. He's a racist. He's a fascist. All this. One, they're nonsense. They're bullshit. They're tricks and they're easy way outs for morons who don't want to do a deeper analysis. Listen, the Iran question's a complicated one. Mm-hmm. But the Iranians, they literally chant death to America. We had relatively stable relationship with Russia before the Ukraine versus, and they have nuclear weapons, so it's a different scenario. But, you know, if we were to find out, I don't know what JD knows or doesn't, he hasn't got any briefings yet, but if we find out that there's some kind of dirty bomb plot in Iran to take out an American city, we're not going to wait for them to strike first. So it's a complicated question, and I don't mean to give a long-winded answer, but it's a different scenario. And you're right, though. There are impulsive comments people make about this stuff. Russell and I chatted about it before. To try to sound tough. Like, I think we become risk averse. Like, Biden he wants to do just enough in Ukraine to not look like he lost Ukraine without saying to people, guys, listen, we're running out of money. We're going bankrupt. We don't have the ability to defend every nation on earth. I'm sorry. Just like in the American Revolution, we figured it out. You're going to have to figure this out on your own. And no one has the balls to say that. There you go.
That's really good. And I also would like to add that America's incredible freight and heft and might ought and could be deployed to bring about diplomatic solutions. And the fact that it isn't seems significantly influenced by the fact that there are profits to be made in the manner that you've described. And our country, too, even just having had an election, has just doubled down on continued funding in the same manner. And to your point about J.D. Vance's comments, again, as I said, I didn't see them. But my concern would be, I suppose, that there seems to be a kind of systemic inertia, that once people arrive in positions of power, there are sort of very various tendrils that latch around them, and they're sort of maneuvered into a particular direction. And I know this won't be a popular thing to say on this channel in particular, but Donald Trump was in office between 2016 and 2020. Like, the sky didn't change color. You know, like, I mean, like, there were no more foreign wars, and I think that's really, really fantastic. But I think that perhaps both sides of the political argument in this country ought to perhaps consider whether there is a bolder vision that could be realized, even though I appreciate and respect what you say, Dan, that what you expect from government is administration, managerialism, getting the hell out of the way and allowing you to get on with your life. And I think that is the one area where I've most found it easy to identify with, like, libertarianism, the right, republicanism, because other than being there to facilitate and support and offer love, you know, forgive the sort of wishy-washiness of the final word, I don't want any involvement. Like, I mean, in a very intuitive way, I don't like being told what to do. I don't like that. Right. I don't accept authority like that.
When did that become cool? Let me take a one quick break here, and I want to ask you about this, because this is where I'm... You as a guy who were... You were surrounded by leftists in this entertainment complex most of your life. I'm not being sarcastic, do not understand this. Quick break here. Hey, you've asked MyPillow. Listen, they're finally bringing you the most requested offer yet. Get the queen size premium MyPillow, now only $19.98. MyPillow is made with patented adjustable fill. It adjusts to your exact individual needs, regardless of your sleep position. Helps keep your neck aligned, holds its shape all night long, so you get the best sleep of your life. I miss mine. I'm sleeping in a hotel. Nice hotel, but I can't deal with the pillows. Get their six-piece kitchen or bed towel sets, only $25. The brand new mattress topper as low as $69.98. Get their famous MyPillow bed sheets for as low as $25 and so much more. Hit them up, MyPillow.com, or call 800-637-4982. Use promo code DAN to get huge discounts on all MyPillow products, including the premium queen-size MyPillow for only $19.98. It's the lowest price ever. Don't delay. Order today. Thanks, MyPillow. We appreciate it. Russell, being surrounded by leftists your whole life, I ran in Maryland. I grew up in New York. I've been surrounded by them, too. I have tried and tried and tried to understand how it became somewhat cool and edgy, whatever word you want to use. I don't know. I'm an old man now. I don't know all the cool terms. But for this paternalism, where people in Hollywood are supposed to be like the James Dean, cigarette-smoking, leather jacket, walking down the street, Marilyn Monroe, they want the government to babysit them like a bunch of fucking nannies. Like, how... I want to go to the doctor. Oh, call nanny government. I don't give a shit what the government tells me to go to the doctor. I want to go to my own damn doctor. I want to send my kid to a good school. No, you're going to send him to a shit school. Well, why? Because the government said that's the government school. Like, when did this paternalism become cool? Like, I thought Hollywood people were supposed to be the renegades, not the pussies. Pardon my language, man, you know? Like, what's up with that?
I don't know what ideology is really, and I don't know how to even quantify, qualify, or describe it politically. It seems to me to be simply conformity. There is no radicalism in it. When I felt, when I was thinking about what might once have been meant by that movement, I think of men like Martin Luther King or Malcolm X, and in particular, people with strong religious faith. In the case of Malcolm X, a Muslim, and in the case of Martin Luther King, obviously a devout Christian minister who gave their lives for civil rights, in particular the racial struggle in this country, and believed that they could change the world through sacrifice. Somehow those sort of values have, I don't know, been devoured and eaten by the culture in a way that doesn't make even metabolic sense. I don't know where that's gone, that energy. It doesn't seem to be about civil rights in a meaningful way. It seems to be about legitimizing authority through the increase of fear and the pledge of safety. And the pandemic was just the most heightened and evident and obvious example of that. Before, when I used to hear people like Jordan Peterson saying, oh, you know, man, that's the left. I used to think, well, I don't, where is the, that's not the left. Because for me, the left was meant to be about, like, supporting working people. Like, sort of people that worked in manufacturing industry, or like around where I grew up, it would have been car manufacturing through the Ford plant in Dagenham, or people that worked in the police service or fire service, nurses, and then teachers, and like people that, you know, like you describe frequently in your show, people that work for a living. My understanding was, you know, because in my country it's called not the Democrat Party, it's called the Labour Party. Mm-hmm. They're meant to represent the working people. Now, you can politically track the chronology orgy of those mutations. It happened in particular and significantly under Tony Blair, when he, inspired by Clinton and allied to George W. Bush, became what was called a centrist, but ultimately that meant, although we would never have used this term then, a globalist who supported war. That was a sort of a pivotal moment where the left in this country changed. So I don't know. I guess I don't know when it stopped being genuinely, when it stopped being actually cool, when it stopped being like, oh, wow, these movie stars or rock stars or hip-hop stars or whatever are aligned with real values and become corporatized. That I don't fully understand, but I figure it's got something either to do with money and ease. I don't know.
I guess so. You know, you just used the line. You reminded me of something I say on my show all the time. You said, you know, they legitimize authority through fear. And you ever see the show The Walking Dead?
You know, I ain't seen it, but I know you mean there's zombies.
Zombies and shit like that. So there's this one scene where, you know, the world ends, the zombies are coming for him, and all of the living human beings, Officer Rick, they run in this prison. It's an abandoned prison. And they run it. Now, who runs into a prison voluntarily when you're more frightened about what's on the outside, the freaking zombies? And I use this analogy on my show all the time. I call it The Walking Dead analogy. That's the left. They voluntarily, spiritually imprison themselves. They do it themselves because the left is so indoctrinated in them that what's on the other side is so fearsome. Donald Trump, the fascists, the racists, they're all coming. Everybody's coming for you. Do you notice that? Everybody's coming for you. Nobody's coming for you. What are you talking about? I'm a conservative. I don't want to be all the fuck out of my life. I don't want to bother with anybody. Like, leave me alone. I'm not coming for you. I'm not even coming for myself. Like, I can't even figure myself out. Like, what the hell are you talking about? Me? Like, you never notice that? Everybody's coming for you. Everybody's coming for you. And that legitimizing authority through fear, brother, man, you just nailed that. That is so right, you know?
Yeah, well, that's the thing that I most noticed during the pandemic, and it's when sort of our the content that I've made has always been, to a degree, anti-establishment. That's why I slightly, when people say, you've been red-pilled, right, I slightly sort of like, hold on, I've never been into the establishment. I suppose I've been perhaps somewhat easily beguiled by the fact that I was doing well, making movies and being, you know, when you're doing that kind of stuff, it's difficult. It takes an iron will when people are telling you that you're fantastic to consider the possibility that you might not be fantastic, that all of your success and the billboards on Sunset Boulevard might simply be an inadvertent side effect of some other people making money out of you. It's very difficult to have that kind of disciplined mind.
I feel like you will agree with this, that people are inherently religious beings. We all are. So when we're talking about the left and how crazy they've become and how, you know, dramatically they've changed since the 1960s or even like the 1970s, what are we looking at? What kind of religious basis is it? Because you're right, like civil rights is something that we could say, you know, there's a Christian foundation for it. We're all, you know, have souls. We all have unique value because we're created in the image of God. Where is this coming from? What is underpinning the vitriol and anger and anti-Christian animosity that we're seeing from the left right now?
I feel that the aim is control. The aim, I feel, is control. I still balk a little at the use of the term the left because I'm still aware of movements in my country around 2017 where temporarily the Labour Party, the left-wing party, was, it seems odd to say, captured by sort of a left-wing politician because they allowed us an electoral process where members of the Labour Party, rank and file normal people that send $50 a year or whatever, could vote. And this elevated Jeremy Corbyn. And at that time, there was a really interesting speech by Steve Bannon at the Oxford Union, where he said, there is going to be a massive shift in politics, and it's going to be populism. We don't know yet, said Bannon, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, I'm not sure how long. He said, we don't know yet if it's going to be left-wing populism or right-wing populism, but what we know is a different type of politics is emerging. Our country strangled and stifled that movement, which did seem to have as one of its concerns, perhaps its primary concern, representing the interests of ordinary people. Mm. I don't think, I declare, that the left could, should, ought represent the interests of ordinary people. It doesn't anymore in any place or in any way that I can appreciate or understand, certainly not in countries like yours or a country like mine. We've just elected a globalist government under the sort of merest auspices of leftism, but they are a corporatist, authoritarian, war-supporting government. That's what they ultimately are, just with the sort of hue of it. When you say, but to your point of anti-Christianity, I am becoming increasingly aware since reading about it more and learning about it more that there's a persecution of any value system that makes you less pliable and malleable. The ideas that I think transcend our political ideas are ideas like, I think, progressivism, but I don't mean cultural progressivism. I mean the idea that human beings are getting better and better and moving towards something. Like, this is the best it's ever been. Look at our technology. Forget the past. We don't need to learn anything from them.
We're merging people with machines.
Yes.
Yeah.
And replacing God, so saying there is no God so we can be God. If you acknowledge there's a God, then you have to live differently. You have to live like all people have inherent value. You have to live like you are in a position of submission and surrender. You have to acknowledge that life is about duty and purpose. If there is no God, you may as well enjoy pleasure and privilege. And even if you choose not to live a life of violence and domination, you can't argue with people that do, because from where are you deriving your principles and values? How are you saying that violence and dominion are wrong, unless inherently there is a universal moral code that deep down all of us know and understand?
Yeah.
Russell, you know what? I was a cop and then worked for the government, and I was, I don't know, maybe mid-30s or so. Before the show took off, I mean, I remember the first time someone, you know, recognized me. I was going into a gym, and the guy said, "Hey, are you Dan Bongino?" I was genuinely stunned. I'm like, how does this guy know me? And I don't know, I was in a local newspaper or some ridiculous thing like that. I don't have 1/1000th of the notoriety, you know, guys like you have who've been in multiple different spaces. But, you know, having gotten a large degree of notoriety and fame at an early age, me at a later age, but to a lesser degree, I have this conversation with my wife all the time. It is so corrupting. It is so inherently polluting. It's like a cancer that gets in your body that you can't, there's no chemo that can kill it. How did you deal with that at such an early age? I mean, I see these guys like Justin Bieber. Kid was famous when he was like 16. There's almost no way you're going to grow up sane. It's just so, everybody tells you how great you are when you suck. And it's like, there's no, you know what I'm saying? There's no corrective mechanism. How did you deal with it?
Well, I think the word intoxicating is a really good one, like, because toxicity, intoxicating can be sort of a really joyous experience to be sort of bewildered for a minute, but also it is a form of poisoning, obviously, in the most literal sense. I wasn't that young. I was about 30. I'd been really working for a long time. I'd started doing, being in, little plays and stuff like that at school when I was 15, and started doing stand-up in my early 20s. It took a long while. I did it for a long while for nothing, while living, actually, if I can be honest, on welfare as a drug addict, signing on, getting welfare checks, doing stand-up comedy, doing it in front of very, very small audiences. It took a lot of time and it took a lot of diligence, and I learned how to fail again and again and again and again and again. I was about 30 and I was clean from drugs and alcohol by the time I got famous. But then it begins again, a kind of, as you say, it is a bewildering thing to enter into. It is corrupting and it is overwhelming, and I suppose it's designed to be. I sort of suppose I feel that whatever institution you're entering into, whether it's Hollywood or politics, it's like there's a machine, a system that's waiting for the raw fodder of new talent. And when you come, it just sort of guzzles you up, and hopefully you sort of behave relatively correctly. I even think that people like sort of, because I watched a documentary the other day, it was 15 minutes long, it wasn't too demanding, about Barack Obama, but it was made before I think he was a senator, and it was made by PBS or whatever, and it was such a sort of an optimistic thing about someone that was clearly very brilliant and a very sort of successful individual with a really unique and unusual background, with like one parent from Africa or Kenya, I think specifically, and that had spent time in Indonesia and had done a lot of good stuff. Because at that point, at the point that this PBS documentary had been made, they hadn't had time to sort of shape it all and go, don't say that, that makes it sound, you know, and right. You see Michelle Obama and she seems like just a go-get-em kind of Chicago lawyer. And then by 2008, when Barack Obama is bailing out the banks and not delivering on hope and change and carrying on like pretty much any president, droning kids and all of that kind of stuff, and participating perhaps in the deterioration of what would have once been regarded as the left of center, but I still wouldn't call that left. I feel like what must have happened? What must happen to all of us? Me, in my relatively insignificant way, participating in institutions like Hollywood, people that go near real power, it seems that, if fame messes you up, God knows knows what that kind of power must do to them. God knows what kind of faith in God and what kind of belief and connection you would require not to start to feel it sort of seeping into you and devouring you. Because what it was like for me, even though I was 30 and even though I was in recovery and even though I sort of knew myself a little bit, is it's overwhelming to go from a person that doesn't have power, doesn't feel special, doesn't feel attractive, to, like, you know, then I wouldn't drink or taking drugs no more, but to suddenly have high availability of sexual partners is like a sort of magical dream. It's on one level incredible, because it's like you're told that that's what you're supposed to want from your culture. You're told that, if you know, the way you gain significance and power is through fame and success, and that the rewards of this are evident and obvious. You're going to have a lot of money, you're going to go places in private jets, everyone's going to want to sleep with you, you're going to have freeways, it's all going to be amazing. And you do that, and aspects of it are sort of stimulating and really, really stimulating. But to a point I made earlier, there is something else that we are looking for. There's certainly something else that I was looking for, and it requires a little bit of discipline and some pretty hard lessons and some serious insight to get there. So yes, it was intoxicating, it was bewildering. I'm very glad I've had the experience, because I suppose now as a father, these are things that I can offer to my children. Lord alone knows whether or not they'll listen, but I can tell them about the reality of drugs. I can tell them about the reality of fame, of money, and the necessity for a spiritual life, the importance of having a purpose. But even as I'm saying this, I'm thinking, they're not listening to me now, and they're 6 and 7, and they're already swearing at me and kicking my ass at regular intervals and behaving how they want to. So hopefully I'll be able to deliver some of these lessons.
I have to ask you about kids in Hollywood, because you were said it's intoxicating and it was corrupting, and you were an adult. And there are so many kids who go into this industry, they get chewed up and spit out, you know? I mean, it's just awful. I think there was a documentary about kids who were on Nickelodeon that came out on HBO, and there was sexual abuse, and none of them became realized adults because it was so stunting. Do you think that kids should even be in Hollywood as a father? Could it be allowed?
I don't know that I would do it. I feel like kids maybe enjoy showing off, but I did a couple of movies that had kids in them, and I sort of felt like, this don't seem right somehow. I don't mean in any nefarious way. I was, in particular, I can remember a movie I did with Adam Sandler, and that guy's a straight up beautiful dude. I love him. And he ran his
sets. Is that Bedtime Stories?
Yeah, exactly.
Loved that movie.
So the kids in that, there was just weird stuff. Like the kids can only work a certain number of hours a day. So the kids have doubles. So there are some kids that are the stars, and then there are kids that double for them. And the kids that are the stars get treated real nice. But the kids that are just the doubles are like, you get in there.
that's weird.
On those kids. And then one time they had a little person, a small person, whatever you call them, you know, like a dwarf, I guess, you know, doing it. That was a crazy day, you know, because I didn't know that it was really turned around. I was surprised. You know, like, it's a weird little world inside there. Also, the idea of monetizing childhood. I don't know, the show business has always had traditions of doing that kind of stuff. But when you learn, like, from, as I'm aware of that Nickelodeon documentary, that there's an institutionalized exploitation that seems extremely common. And we're all talking about it in various ways. The use of trafficking, exploitation. Yeah, there's some things going on there. Me, I don't think I want my children anywhere near that. I don't put them on social media or nothing like that, just because of the experiences I've had with fame and celebrity, and because I know how fame and celebrity can turn. It's amazing when everyone thinks you're wonderful, but what about if they just change their mind? What if you say something they don't like? Then you're ready for a sort of a different go on the carousel, you know?
Russell, exit question. You've been generous with your time. Folks, you can find his show, by the way, on Rumble. Russell Brand has his own show. It is phenomenal. Just put his name in the search bar. Give him a follow. Click that green button. We really appreciate him on Rumble. He's a huge advocate for free speech. Lighter question on the way out. We've been talking politics, Christianity, serious topics, polluting effects of fame. I ask everyone famous or with some degree of notoriety the same question. Sometimes you get an answer, sometimes you don't. I knew when I had kind of cracked it open. There was a moment, this gun speech I gave about the Second Amendment at the Maryland Capitol went nuclear, and I knew things were going to change. Was there a Road to Damascus moment where you're performing, you're doing comedy, you're acting or whatever, and you're thinking to yourself, wow, I made it? Like, do you see or hear yourself on the radio? Do you see a billboard? And you're like, gosh, everything's going to be different now.
I support West Ham United Football Club, and I've been going there most of my life, you know, with my dad when I was a kid, with my mates when I was a little older, sometimes even on my own. And then one day in 2006, I went, And I guess I'd been on a really popular talk show in my country. Everyone recognized me. Oi, what you fucking doing here? How come you're coming in now? I've never seen you here before.
That's good accent.
Yeah, you know, that's
Jordan that's, Peterson, Canadian.
The Jordan
He's
Peterson
all different
spot
various
on.
UK dialects. It's
well, good. Dan, I don't know if you know, but I used to be an actor.
Rather yeah, than good at it.
People saw that.
Man, I can't fake an accent for shit. You're pretty
me?
Good. And you flip in and out like that. You did the Jordan Peterson. It sounded like he was in the room. Holy shit, that's good.
Oh, thanks.
So that yeah, the football
game. And then they made me sing a chant, like a famous way. And I thought, oh God, it's changed. This has changed now. Everything is different. There have been lovely little like moments like that was actually quite beautiful. A moment where it felt like achievement and excitement when I didn't think of fame as something solely toxic, corrupting, and divisive, but something that's sort of a celebration of performance or showing off or creativity or something. So well, probably that moment.
I want to thank you for a couple of things. I want to thank you first for advocating for free speech with Rumble. We don't have to agree on everything. That's the point of free speech. You tell me where you stand, I tell you where I stand. Maybe we meet in the middle, maybe we don't. And secondly, your advocacy for faith in Jesus Christ, it matters a lot to me. It matters a world to Evita. You know, we run into each other in church sometimes, and the world is empty without it, man. The world is empty without it. I mean, there's only so many private jets and cars. You can only drive one car at a time. You can only spend $1 at a time. You can only get on one fancy computer at a time.
And you can't take any of it with you.
Amount of love for Jesus. No, and you know what? She's right. None of that is getting buried with you ever. Thank you, my friend, for spending the time. Yes. Really appreciate it. Folks, thanks so much for tuning in so much. I really deeply appreciate it. I'll be at the RNC tonight watching the speech. We'll also be recording some content for tomorrow. Thanks again. See you back on Rumble. Download the Rumble app and join us on your desktop, rumble.com/Bongino. Take care.
You just heard the Dan Bongino Show. 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 You just heard the Dan.